Chapter 47, Streaker. Moki and Heioki had both volunteered for guard duty, but for different reasons. Both enjoyed getting out of the ship for a change, and neither dolphin particularly minded having to stay plugged into a sled for hours at a stretch in the dark, silent waters outside the ship. But beyond that, they differed. Heioki was there because he felt it was a necessary job. Moki, on the other hand, hoped guard duty would give him a chance to kill something. "I wish to God a Jim sent me after Aki instead of Kathar John," Moki rasped. "I could have tracked the smartass just as well." Moki's sled rested about 20 yards from Heoki's on the high underwater bluff overlooking the ship. Arc lamps still shone on Streaker's hull, but the area was deserted now, off limits to all but those few cleared by the vice captain. Moki looked at Heioki through the flexible bubble dome of his sled. Heioki was silent as usual. He had ignored Moki's comment completely. "Arrogant spawn of a stink squid." Heioki was another tersiap smart aleck like Kredaki and that stuck-up little midship fin, Aki. Moki made a small sound sculpture in his mind. It was an image of ramming and tearing. Once he had put Kredaki in the role of the victim, the captain who had so often caught him gold-bricking and embarrassed him by correcting his Anglic grammar, had finally got his just deserts. Moki was glad, but now he needed another fantasy target. It was no fun to imagine ripping into nobody in particular. The Calafian Aki served well when it was discovered that the young middy had betrayed the vice-captain. Moki had hoped to be the one sent after Aki, but Takata Jim had ordered Kathar John out instead, explaining that the purpose was to bring Aki back for discipline, not to commit murder. The giant had seemed oblivious to such nice distinctions when he departed, equipped with a powerful laser rifle. Perhaps Takata Jim had less than perfect control over Kathar John and had sent him away for his own safety. From the gleam in Kathar John's eye, Moki did not envy the Calafian when the youth was found. Let Kathar John have Aki. One small pleasure lost didn't take away much from Moki's overall joy. It was good to be big for a change. On his off-duty time, everybody got out of Moki's way as if he was a pod leader. Already he had his eye on one or two of those sexy little females in Makani's sickbay. Some of the younger males looked good, too. Moki wasn't particular. They would all come around soon enough when they saw the way the current pulled. He briefly resisted an urge, but couldn't help himself. He let out a short skirr of triumph in a forbidden form. "Glory is glory. Biting is and glory. Female submit. A new bull is. He saw Heioki react at last. The other guard jerked slightly and raised his head to regard Moki. He was silent, though, as Moki met his eye defiantly. Moki sent a focused beam of sonar directly at Heioki to show he was listening to him, too. Arrogant stink squid. Heioki would get his, too, after Takata Jim had locked his jaws on the situation. And the men of Earth would never disapprove because Big Human Metz was at Takata Jim's side, agreeing with everything. Moki let out another squeal of primal, tasting the forbidden primitiveness with delight. It pulled at something deep inside him. Each taste brought on further hunger for it. Let Heioki click in disgust. Moki dared even the Galactics to come and try to interfere with him and his new captain. Heioki bore Moki's bestial squawking stoically, but it reminded him that he had joined up with a gang of cretins and misfits. Unfortunately, the cretins and misfits were right, and the brightest of Streaker's crew were caught up in a disastrous misadventure. Aoki was desperately sad over the crippling of Kraideki. The captain had obviously been among the best the breed could produce, but the accident had made possible a quiet and perfectly legal change in policy, and he couldn't regret that. Takata Jim, at least, recognized the foolishness of pursuing the desperate Trojan seahorse scheme. Even if Streaker could be moved silently to the Thenanin wreck, and if Tisht's crew had miraculously set things up so Streaker could wear the hulk as a gigantic disguise and actually take off under those conditions, what would that win them? Even if Thomas Orley had reported that Thenanin were still in the battle in space, there remained the question of fooling those Thenanin into coming to rescue a supposed lost battleship and escorting it to the rear. A dubious chance. The question was moot. Orley was obviously dead. There had been no word for days, and now the gamble had turned into a desperate wish. Why not just give the thrice-damned Galactics what they want? Why this romantic nonsense of saving the data for the Terrigen's Council? What do we care about a bunch of dangerous, long-lost hulks anyway? It's obviously no business of ours if the Galactics want to fight over the derelict fleet. Even the Kathroop Aboriginals weren't worth dying for. It all seemed plain to Aoki. It was also apparent to Takata Jim, whose intelligence Aoki respected. But if it was so obvious, why did people like Kraideki and Orley and Hikahi disagree? Quandaries like this were the sort of thing that had kept Aoki a subsec in the engine room instead of trying for non-com or officer, as his test scores had indicated. Moki blatted another boast phrase in primal. It was even louder this time. The Stenos was trying to get a rise out of him. Aoki sighed. Many of the crew had begun behaving that way, not quite as bad as Moki, but bad enough. And it wasn't just Stenos, either. Some of the Stenos were behaving better than some Tersiops. As morale dissolved, so did the motivation to maintain Kenink, to keep up the daily fight against the animal side that always wanted out. One would hardly have been able to predict, weeks ago, who later turned out to be the most susceptible. Of course, all the best crewfen were away, with Soesi and Hikahi. Fortunately, Aoki thought. He dwelt on the irony of good going to bad and right coming out of wrong. At least Takata Jim seemed to understand how he felt and didn't hold it against him. The vice captain had taken Aoki's support with gratitude. He could hear Moki's tail thrash, but before the angry little Stenos could voice another taunt, both of their sled speakers came to life. Aoki and Moki, Comsec Fin Huerka Pete calling. Acknowledge. The call was from the ship's comm and detection operator. The fact that the jobs had been combined showed just how bad things were. Roger, Aoki here. Moki's indisposed at the moment. What's up? He heard Moki choke a protest, but it was clear the Finn would be a while reformatting his mind for Anglic. We have a sonic bogey to the east, Aoki. Sounds like a sled. If hostile, destroy. If it's someone from the island, they must be turned back. If they refuse, shoot to disable the sled. Understood. Aoki and Moki on our way. All right, Gabby, he told the speech-tied Moki. Aoki gave his partner a long, narrow grin. Let's check it out. And watch that trigger. We're only enforcing a quarantine. We don't shoot at crewmates unless we absolutely have to. With a neural impulse, he turned his sled motor on. Without looking back, he lifted off from the muddy rise, then accelerated slowly to the east. Moki watched Aoki head out before turning his sled to follow. Tempted, tempted, tempted Moki is. Temptation delicious is. The sleds dropped, one after another, into the gloom. On a passive sonar screen, they were small, blurry dots that drifted slowly past the shadow of the seamount, then disappeared behind it. Kipiro opened his harness's right claw and dropped the portable listening unit. It tumbled down to the soft ooze. He turned to Jillian. "Done and gone. They chase our shadows. They'll not like to watch false prey." Jillian had expected guards. Several kilometers back, they had left the sled on delayed automatic and swam off to the north and west. By the time the sled started up again, they had circled to a few hundred yards west of the outlock. Jillian touched Kipiru's flank. The sensitive hide trembled under her hand. "You remember the plan, Kipiru?" "Need you ask?" Jillian raised an eyebrow in surprise. A triple upsweep trill and a wavering interrogative click? That was an unusually brief and straightforward reply for Trinary. Kipiru was capable of more subtlety than she had thought. "Of course not, dear bow wave rider. I apologize. I'll do my part, and I'll not worry for a moment about you doing yours." Kipiru looked at her as if wishing he didn't have to wear a breather, as if he wanted to speak to her in her native language. Jillian felt some of this in a gentle telepathic touch. She hugged his smooth gray torso. "You take care, Kipiru. Remember that you're admired and loved, very much so." The pilot tossed his head. "To swimming or battle, to warning or rescue, to earning your trust." They dropped over the edge of the bluff and swam quickly for the ship's outer lock.